KVON Napa, 1440 AM and KVON.com.
Broadcasting live from South Napa Century Center.
Narvaez Insurance Services brings you 40 years of combined experience to protect small businesses. As an independent brokerage, Narvaez Insurance Services selects the most appropriate coverage for the best value for any insurance need from different insurance carriers. Business liability, workers' comp, umbrella policies for maximum protection, and of course, auto, home, renter's insurance. Also offering DMV services for your title transfers and renewing registration. With Narvaez Insurance Services, you can avoid the long lines at the DMV. Contact Narvaez Insurance Services for a competitive quote by calling 707-927-3204. Give Bernie Narvaez a call at 707-927-3204.
Vintage Sotheby's International Realty, Napa's only locally owned and operated Sotheby's Realty office, has an amazing team of experienced and knowledgeable agents that exceed the high standards and qualifications to assure the ultimate goal of assisting clients buying or selling homes throughout the entire Napa Valley and beyond. Whether now or sometime in the future, remember to consider Vintage Sotheby's Realty, the luxury brand with the local focus that you deserve for any real estate matters. Visit VintageSotheby'sRealty.com to connect when it makes sense for you, or call 707-944-0888. That's 707-944-0888. DRE number 01874685.
It's time for All Things Napa with your host, Lee W. Miller, a community leader, full-time realtor, and a serial networker passionate about promoting local businesses. Let's learn what's new in the Napa business scene today.
Hey, welcome to All Things Napa. I guess I should have told my guests that are visiting us from far and abroad that they were kind of on the air there for a second with some music playing in the background. Welcome, David, Gavin, and Sarah.
Hello.
Hello. Are you guys today?
Well, we were just singing the theme song for our set puppy.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, set puppy. Do I have to call my publicist? Did I say anything damaging? Is my career over? Do I get canceled now?
No, I don't think so.
Call your mom later, Gavin.
I think the music will have drowned out your compliments of one another. So, for our listening audience, I just want to start by saying that I feel incredibly honored to have these guests on, as they are just incredibly talented, and I'm very proud to call them my friends as well. So why don't we start with you guys doing an introduction of yourselves, and then we will get into talking about this phenomenal film called Last Call and its unique aspects of the film and the performances that, you know, people come on and they talk about performances and, you know, praises and everything, but this is at a whole new level. But I want to focus on both the uniqueness of the film and the performances both. Okay. Ladies first, Sarah.
Thank you, Lee.
All right. Hello, my name is Sarah Booth. I am an actress and a producer and also a fitness enthusiast. I have been acting for the last 12, 13 years of my life. I've loved every moment of it, almost every moment of it. And that's what I will continue to do. And I'm so happy to be here talking with you, Lee.
Well, thank you very much. Maybe we can circle back to almost every moment of it at another time.
Yeah, exactly.
Gavin.
I'm Gavin Booth. I'm a filmmaker. I'm the director of Last Call. I've shot a bunch of music videos for artists you may have heard of and many you haven't. And yeah, that's me. Canadian, so generally 10% nicer than most of the people you meet every day in America.
Are you talking about the exchange rate or just genuinely nicer?
There's a politeness exchange rate that works in Canada's favor when we cross the border.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you and Howie Mandel and Michael J. Fox and the list of others that Canadians always want to remind us of, we are Canadian. So you are now
Let's
in that.
Let's not forget Justin Bieber.
Oh, I didn't know that one. Okay. So you're in good company there, and we're happy to have you in the U.S.
I've heard of those guys. I should probably check out their work.
Yeah. All right, David.
Hi, I'm David Wilkins, and I live in the Canada of America, also known as Texas. And I am an actor, writer, producer, director, all-around storyteller. I'm trying to change my moniker to storyteller. I feel like it's all-encompassing, and it sounds all, you know, kitschy and cool.
Yeah, well,
That is me. I'm also a fitness unenthusiast, and as told by my excellent dad bod,
that counterbalancing Sarah's fitness prowess, then, right?
Well, I have to.
Yeah,
you know, there can only be so much muscle tone in the world.
Right. Well, I'm definitely closer to your club than to Sarah, so. All right, so thank you, guys.
You're a handsome man. Everybody knows that.
Thank you so much. So let's talk about the film. Give us a little synopsis of it. And are you all three in different directions?
Sure, yeah.
You're all in different locations?
Yeah, Sarah and I are here in Windsor, Ontario, Canada currently. David's just outside of Austin.
Okay.
So the film, Last Call is a very simple setup. It's a man calling a suicide hotline in the attempt to connect with somebody while he's in a bad state. He's been drinking and taking pills and manages to misdial by one digit, which gets him connected to the character of Beth, who is a random stranger to him, and is when the phone rings, is working her job as a night janitor at a college and decides to do the right thing and stay on the phone with him and try to change the outcome of the evening. Where the film gets super unique is that it was shot in a true single take, meaning that the camera never stopped from the beginning of the movie to the end. And the movie is also presented in split screen, which means we have parallel stories running. We had two camera crews in different parts of the city filming simultaneously on both Scott's side of the story and Beth's side of the story, which make up the movie Last Call.
And if that doesn't kind of blow your mind, if you know anything about film, just to think about that a little bit and how they could possibly have pulled that off. It's not like they were on one side of a wall, different areas of the city. I've seen the film three times now. I finally carved out enough time to prepare for this, and there's a number of, you know, and of course we're not doing any spoilers or anything of that nature, so no need to call out spoiler alert. But I'm noticing something different and more in depth every time that I see it. For example, last night I saw the picture on the refrigerator for the first time, and I can't believe that the first two times I didn't even notice that, but I think it was because I was focusing on Sarah's character at that point rather than on David's. So little things like that. And one question that I have for you, in talking with different filmmakers over the years from the Napa Valley Film Festival, the directors always share with me that there are no accidents. Every single thing, every minute detail in a film is intentional and has some purpose. But I noticed when there was a point where David's character walks out onto the balcony and there's a distant siren, emergency siren. Was that just a coincidence because you were shooting with, you know, one take that you happened to have that siren, or was that dubbed in to enhance the emotion of, hey, this is an emergency situation?
That was definitely dubbed in to do the soundscapes of the city. We lucked out on most nights that, you know, we're shooting so late in the night that it is a very generally quiet city for the most part. So we just wanted to sort of enhance what it sounds like when he's out on his balcony and almost make it feel like we're, you know, we never state what city the movie is happening in. It's sort of what they call like an anywhere, anyville kind of story where this could be happening anywhere in North America. So we just wanted to sort of add that in. And maybe it's a bit of a foreshadowing as well, shall we say.
Yeah. So...
Yeah, you know, it was funny. During one of the takes that we did that didn't end up being the final film, at the very end, Sarah's character is outside, and there was an ambulance that drives by her. And it was definitely one of those, like, the timing could not have been more perfect. And so there were definitely...
Uh-oh. Broke up there a little bit.
Gavin's go-to get average floor is kind of the master of making sure that everything seems like a happy accident.
That's interesting because I did notice a guy on a motorcycle went by, and it's probably at about that same point in the scene, but you can only see the reflection in the window. But
that's because our cinematographer filming on Beth's side of the story brilliantly turned the camera in towards her because he was definitely not a planned extra and was just gawking wildly. And had he not turned the camera, would have wrecked the take right at the end of the movie as he realized we were filming a movie. So that was a pretty brilliant save that didn't blow, you know, cause when you're shooting in one take, you know, for your audience, like anything can go wrong at any moment. Then you have to reset and start over. And if we'd gotten all the way to the end of the take that ended up being the movie and had it wrecked by somebody with their mouth open, turning, staring at the camera, that would have been a real shame, to say the least.
Yeah, when I walked out of the building during that take, I knew that it was a good take, at least on my side. I didn't know what was happening on the other side. But my heart started pounding, and I was like, I just was giving Seth some eyes, and he was assuring me that he was going to solve the problem. And yeah, there was a lot of nonverbal communication going on in that moment, and thankfully he saved the take.
I love little tidbits like that. So I think it's important to also mention that, yes, it was in one take, but that doesn't mean that you guys spent a couple of days setting up and shot it in one take and you were done. There were actually how many one takes?
We ended
five
up
completed. Yeah, five completed takes, like start to finish. There's a couple false starts, but yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we ended up doing five, but also we did 10 days of rehearsal prior to recording for real, knowing that those five takes could have been the movie. But before that, we rehearsed for 10 days and would record every rehearsal regardless of what was in the background. We knew they weren't going to be useful takes, as in useful for, you know, the finished product, but they were definitely useful for us to sit down after we would run the movie, and we would sit down and watch basically what was going to be the movie, and we would adjust after every rehearsal, which was such a blessing to have our cameraman be so strong and record all those takes for us.
So one of the things that I noticed, again, didn't notice it until the third time that I watched it, is how critical the timing needed to be when there wasn't back and forth dialogue, when Scott, David's character, puts the phone down. And you're doing what you needed to do. Again, I don't want to give anything away during that time. And was there some clock in the back, you know, in that was off camera that David was watching, or was that just kind of gut feel and you guys made it happen? And if he came back too early, you adjusted.
Yeah, we had what we called the, like, accordion timing, where we could stretch it out or compress it. And both David and Sarah knew these are the beats. This is the next thing where you'll connect. But for example, you know, in the beginning of the film, this isn't much of a spoiler. Scott leaves a bar and walks to his apartment, and we don't necessarily have control of the streets or what the pedestrian traffic will be like, or even just walking speed will change from take to take. Plus getting into the lobby of the apartment, into the elevator, you know, we don't have control over those. So it would vary, you know, up to, you know, a minute and a half at certain times. So, you know, Sarah was prepared to, you know, she's at the beginning of the story, like starting to her cleaning routine at the college. She always had more tasks available to her to keep going versus just kind of stop and wait. Yeah, so there were certain times in the movie when they're not connected over the phone that syncs them back up again, that we had this sort of accordion effect where they both knew blocking that could shorten or lengthen what was happening to match the timing of the other side. Because that was sort of the unpredictability of the film, where we didn't always know exactly how it would play out from take to take.
Not being an actor, I can only imagine the intensity of emotion that was required for both roles. And then to think that you've got to remember this blocking and this timing and be able to improvise at a moment's notice on top of that, and then still recall the emotion and things of that nature, that just makes it all the more mind-boggling. And my wife asked me last night, ask Sarah how, and I know that if I was if I did this for a living, there's a right way to answer or ask this question, but from where did you invoke the emotion? You know, you have a method that you can describe?
I have tools that I can use depending on where I am emotionally that day. Some days it's very easy. Your heart is more open, you're more vulnerable. Whatever happened to you that morning affects, you know, the rest of your day or whatever's happening in your life. But I definitely had tools in case I got to certain points of the film and I felt like my instrument maybe wasn't working as well as I wanted it to. But again, me and David were very good at being in the moment. So some takes weren't as emotional as the other ones, which at first I kind of was angry at myself for, you know, for not getting to a certain point, but then watching them back, knowing that those moments played truthfully. But yeah, I definitely had little triggers to help me, especially before we would go to camera. I would listen to very specific music. I would look at images that touched me, images of my family that opens up my heart and makes me very vulnerable. So those were kind of the tools that I would do to kind of like warm up during the film. And then, you know, I was lucky. I was listening to, you know, a man on the other line pouring his heart out to me. So that was definitely, you know, pretty much what I needed to get there.
That's a good point, because you are incredibly emotional, and there's parts in the dialogue where David's character is oblivious to your emotion and keeps rambling about bruising alcohol and Rob Roy's and Manhattan's and things, which I think is such great dialogue to get inside his character, that as despondent as he is, he just wants to talk about different drinks and how they're made and how they shouldn't be made and things of that nature. So I want to talk about the writing aspect of this too, but when Sarah was just answering that question about where she goes to pull that emotion, I was reminded mentally of Alfred Hitchcock and how he would maybe scream at somebody and make them really upset just before a take. Gavin, you didn't yell at your wife or anything to help the emotion on her part, right?
Not if I want to live long. I don't.
Well, unfortunately, she's so good enough that you don't have to pull a Hitchcock type of method. So.
No, I was operating camera on David's side, and not yelling, but there were a few times in that take that we used that we had to talk to each other in the middle of the take that sort of gets edited out in the sound to work around a few sort of glitches that were happening that could have potentially wrecked a take. So definitely communication in the middle of takes isn't uncommon from time to time, just to make a micro adjustment or to catch, you know, sort of work on a moment of improv to enhance something, but generally try to sit back and let the actors do their thing until the take is finished.
That's a really interesting point too, because usually the director makes his comments at cut and implements at next action, and you're speaking in her ear kind of thing while she's supposed to be staying in character and listening to David and taking direction from you all at the same time, and David too.
No. I was on the side of it. So yeah.
Okay.
We just had a moment where the phone wasn't connecting to her extension correctly, and David did a really brilliant save of sort of scratching his beard and putting his hand up over his face, which blocked his mouth from the camera, so he could say, "The phone's not connecting right. What do we want to do?" And I'm not on camera behind the camera, so I'm able to talk to him and on the fly make that adjustment, figure out how to save it, and keep the take going. So just little things like that.
Wow. And the funny thing is, I can't imagine that the phone didn't connect properly on all five takes. So it doesn't work on that one, and that one is the one that ends up being the one.
Yeah, it was the only take that we had a connection problem.
Wow.
So it definitely added some additional emotion on my side.
Oh, I bet.
And I think on Sarah's, because she, you know, she's waiting for this phone call that usually comes right now.
And yeah, so I remember that moment where, like, in the choreography of the film, knowing that, okay, by the time I get to this area, I should be hearing a phone ringing and not hearing the phone ring. And I decided to continue my duties as a janitor. So I did that. And Seth, our cameraman and cinematographer that was shooting my side, was brilliant. He held a beautiful frame, and it was suspenseful, and I was around the corner pacing up the hall, saying a lot of swear words and wondering if this take was going to continue, because we were in it, like, you know, we're good, what, at that point, 20 minutes, 30 minutes into this movie. So yeah, there was just a lot of stress, and then when I heard that phone call ring, it's just like, vroom, here we go again. Like, it's just—I don't think I've ever felt more alive than when I shot this movie.
So maybe some of those that actually helped, and I would think that, yeah, you're moments away from just saying, "All right, cut, let's start again and get the phones right." But maybe that extra angst that you were all feeling came out somehow better on film.
Absolutely. I think it just, like, all those moments of unknowing, which is exactly what a character would go through in that moment, just adds that magic and that truth and that vulnerability as well of hanging around a corner thinking, are we going to keep going? Did everything I just do, is it going to go in the garbage? You know, you're just so vulnerable at that point that when you do feel that momentum pick up again, I feel it just helps with the performance. Absolutely.
I think there's a bit of a tightrope walk to it, you know, versus just walking with both feet on the ground for me, because from take to take, I would see something where, oh, I could move in for a bit of a close up here and it would be a more emotional moment or frame the camera differently. But, like, it's all a bit of a wild gamble, you know, it's all like making plays on the fly in the middle of a big sports game, you know, like you could cost the team the game or the, you know, the trophy or the Super Bowl or whatever analogy you want to use. But there's something exciting about taking those risks and knowing that some of those risks have paid off and made the movie, you know, what it is.
Great. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break. Stay with us, and we're going to learn more about future projects with the cast, writer, director of Last Call. We'll be right back.
KVON Napa, 1440 AM and KVON.com.
Broadcasting live from South Napa Century Center.
Vintage Sotheby's International Realty, Napa's only locally owned and operated Sotheby's Realty office, has an amazing team of experienced and knowledgeable agents that exceed the high standards and qualifications to assure the ultimate goal of assisting clients buying or selling homes throughout the entire Napa Valley and beyond. Whether now or sometime in the future, remember to consider Vintage Sotheby's Realty, the luxury brand with the local focus that you deserve for any real estate matters. Visit VintageSotheby'sRealty.com to connect when it makes sense for you, or call 707-944-0888. That's 707-944-0888. DRE number 01874685.
Introducing a new and unique source of accessory dwelling units. HabitatADU.com is an all-in-one ADU builder who makes the entire process convenient and actually fun. The new statewide ADU building codes means more properties can accommodate them. Choose from 9 pre-designed models of varying size, built off-site, and delivered nearly 100% complete in much less time than traditional methods. Leave all the permit process and management of the project to the team at HabitatADU.com. Find out if you might benefit from an accessory dwelling unit on your property at HabitatADU.com.
It's just like, what is raining? How? Why is this happening?
We are back. Did you guys catch up a little bit?
We did.
Oh, good.
We did.
Weather was probably
We were just talking about the crazy weather that Texas has been having the last few weeks.
Yes. Yeah, crazy. And you're just outside of Austin, right?
Yeah, I'm in a little town called Round Rock.
Oh. No, never mind. I'm not going to say that. All right. So, why did you make this movie, and how do you find the movies that you guys want to make?
Well, that's a good question. You know, on the career side of things, you know, the three of us wanted to make this movie because we thought it was something unique, you know, a good story told in a unique way. And in this career, nobody does anything for you until you're sort of already famous. It's a weird conundrum of the people that can help you build your career don't want to help you until you're already established. So it's our job, literally our job, to make projects that can stand out from the rest of all of the independent films, all the acting projects, all the directing projects that exist. So we made this movie believing that it was the next step in our careers. In terms of telling the story, David, do you want to talk about why we chose to make Last Call from a story perspective?
Yeah, so I was on the phone chatting with a dear friend of mine, Katie Featherston, in Los Angeles, and she was telling me about finishing up her training to be a volunteer for the Crisis Hotline, and told me, you know, just briefly went into some stories about some of the phone calls that she'd been listening into and how she, you know, had taken her first call and, you know, what that experience was. And we got off the phone and my mind was just reeling about this situation where a human being has decided that they no longer want to go on living and reaches out to a complete stranger who their job, their role, their desire is to convince this person they don't know that their life is in fact worth living, and to try and give them, you know, hope and encouragement and direction and assistance to, you know, to keep going, you know, a little bit longer. And it struck me as like the most basic and powerful human interaction and human experience. And so I knew I wanted to, you know, and kind of selfishly as an actor, I felt like that would be such a challenging role to try and take on. And it grew into something. I learned so much about mental health and about my own mental health struggles, and just how important it is that we allow people to feel comfortable enough to talk about these things, that it's not stigmatized, that people don't feel like there's something wrong with them. You know, if you sprain your ankle or if you catch the flu, you don't say to anybody like, oh, you know, I've got the flu. And they're like, well, you should just get over it. Have you considered just, you know, not having the flu? And it's not a big deal to go and see a doctor when you're sick or you've injured your body. And yet we don't give the same sort of advice or the same sort of grace to people that are suffering from mental health, crises. And so it was like, I wanted to make a movie about it, but how do you make a movie about a phone call that's interesting for an hour and a half? And so I had worked with Gavin, maybe a month before on a one take music video. And I knew that he had sort of a penchant for long takes and single takes and also, you know, doing things creatively. And so, you know, it occurred to me that that would be an interesting way to try and tell this story. But then, you know, you're looking at one person for the duration of the film. And so it's one of those situations where had Gavin and I not known each other for, you know, then I think the 9 months before we started developing this project, had we not had all the discussions about past projects and, you know, dream projects, I wouldn't have known about his film Four Shots that he had been trying to make for years and years. That was supposed to be a single take film that was shown in a quadrant. So there would have been four single takes going on simultaneously. Wow. And so, it just occurred to me that not only would that be a good way to watch both of these characters, but that Gavin would 100% be on board to take on something like this. And so that was sort of the generation of the idea. And so I kind of pitched it to him at our weekly meetup called Positive Coffee Talk. And that's sort of when it began. We started outlining the story and starting doing research. And Katie Featherston was an invaluable source for helping us understand what a crisis hotline operator goes through, what kind of training they have. And that ultimately is what led to us making the decision to make Beth's character a stranger and a person who didn't have that amount of training to really give the audience a chance to live in her shoes and see, think for themselves, like what would I do in this situation? You know, would I stay on the phone? Would I hang up the phone? There was a lot of things that had to happen prior to us starting this project for it to have come together as it did.
That's a great answer. And I got lost in, like I did the last time I was interviewing you guys, I get so caught up in the answer that I'm not planning the next question. So, Gavin and Sarah, do you want to add anything to that?
Well, in terms of finding stories in general, I mean, David and I are always just sharing little ideas and pitches, and often it comes from news stories. We'll read, sort of rip from the headlines, as they say. We'll read a headline and something to say, but if you twisted it and did this, then it becomes a good horror movie, or the comedy in the situation we just read about becomes this. So we're just always sort of brainstorming things. And I think that's it, just being receptive to ideas and just the way that I kind of look at life and hear friends' stories of their own lives. Everything to me is sort of like open for potential storytelling. So it's hard. It's rare. Last Call has this pinpoint of where the idea came from. And I can't always say that about a lot of my ideas. I don't remember the exact genesis of where it came from, but it's usually just that, living life and listening and reading, and just every once in a while something clicks and you go, oh, there's the spark of a movie story in there somewhere.
Do you guys write those down for future reference? Like, I know a lot of comedians think of a joke or something and it may not be completely formulated and perfected, but they just jot it down and refer to it later.
Yeah, God bless
we have a shared Google Doc.
Oh, perfect.
That we're constantly adding to. So.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and then I just my notepad on my iPhone looks like the serial killer's like diary from Seven or something, where it's just insane ramblings that only I could decode.
your weird manifesto. At any point when you were early in the process of writing, did you give consideration to swapping the roles, and David's the janitor and Sarah is the caller?
No, but maybe that's the sequel.
There you go. Yeah, because her son doesn't come home again, and she's really very despondent over that. Maybe, I don't know. So let's
Lee, what's funny about living back in Canada for this year during the pandemic is, you know, we're in Windsor, Ontario, where we shot the movie. And from my balcony, like right now, I can see I can see Scott's apartment. I can see the building poking up over some other houses. So I'm actually living in the world of Last Call currently.
That's pretty cool. So my wife and I love independent films, and yet sometimes we get really frustrated with independent films because as we've gone to film festivals and watched more and more streaming independents, the thing about an independent is when it's over, bam, it's over. And you're like, what? I can't believe it. And so I love that and I hate it about that, but I just wanted to share our perspective. Why is supporting any indie film so important in the industry?
It's. I mean, you're giving us creators that lifeline, or sort of a vine to swing to our next project. You know, I just think people will enjoy stories they're not seeing through the traditional sort of studio style of filmmaking. And although, listen, I love giant Star Wars movies, and I love a good action movie and big comedies with Kevin Hart and everything else, but there's just so much humanity and so many great stories being told in independent cinema. You know, it's really about just finding an audience so that we can have a groundswell and an appreciation for the project. One so that we can earn back the money that's been spent on creating the project, you know, without the big studio marketing budgets, but also just, you know, to share these stories with the world. And hopefully that means that our voice is unique enough and enjoyed enough that we get to continue to tell these stories. So it's, you know, it almost sometimes sounds like a charity drive just for $1, but, you know, just for one view of an independent film and telling some friends about it. That's the biggest thing. If you do watch independent films, tell people around you that you enjoyed it so that they know to seek it out. It's sort of the way all bands have broken in the past. All small businesses have grown into being Starbucks and international chains. It's just people enjoying a product. You know, this is an entertainment product. And if they enjoy it, tell others about it so they know it exists, to sort of help that product grow and reach more people.
Great answer. I appreciate that. And I share the sentiment. In fact, I somewhat compare network TV to the big, you know, Hollywood budget type of stuff, and how stale all the content seems to be. Every once in a while you get something good, but any Netflix production, Amazon, or any of the others, that's where all the really good content is. And so it becomes very obvious to a viewer that there is so much talent out there that is yet to penetrate the holy grail or whatever of those making the decisions, and they're making the wrong decisions with release after release after release, at least on TV. And I know that there's still bombs, films that hit the theaters or whatever, but there is just so much talent. And you could say the same thing for musical talent. There's so many great, talented musicians and singers out there that, unfortunately, without the break, they'll never be discovered. So I think that's part and parcel to independent filmmaking.
Listen, I I love vanilla ice cream, and there is nothing wrong with vanilla ice cream, and there are lots of different variations of vanilla ice cream. But man, there are 31 other flavors out there that you should be trying.
Right.
You can't just always have vanilla. You're missing out.
There you go. Well, and if that was a comment to make sure that it was me that was blasting the studios and not you, then that's okay too. So what is the, from a business standpoint, you know, we've got the creative, we talked about the creative, and I mean, I could talk to you guys for the next couple hours easily, but let's talk about the business aspect. What's the biggest takeaway that you've learned from making and now distributing this film? Because this was actually filmed, what, in 2018, 2019? And here it is finally available for streaming.
Yeah, filmed in September of 2018, completed post-production in 2019, and then that was when we started our run in different film festivals, and that's how we met you, coming through to the Napa Valley Film Festival, which is still, we talk about that festival on a regular basis. We had so much fun.
We did. We talked about how much fun we had and what do we remember from that festival.
A lot of wine.
I would say for me, I mean, I didn't produce the movie. I was just in it. But from a business standpoint, the biggest thing that I've learned is people love this movie. We have so much great feedback. Like, again and again and again, people are asking, when is this going to theaters? Where can we see it? All that fun stuff. But I would say from a business standpoint, the thing that I learned the most is that in the future, when you have an independent film with no names in it, get someone with a name who can either be an executive producer on it, put their stamp of approval on it, or get some kind of big name cameo put in your film, because unfortunately that's what really, really, really drives the sales of films, is having people with names in them.
Interesting. So McConaughey could have been the bartender.
Yeah, listen, I'm looking to remake Last Call, starring Rooney Mara and Paul Giamatti, because then everybody will see it, and then we'll actually get on the Oscar shortlist instead of our little kerfuffle that happened earlier last week.
Oh, John Malkovich, what have you done?
Yeah. Well, and there's another Last Call movie, was Owen Wilson or something, that is just not even in the same. Okay, I'll stop.
Yeah, no, with Jeremy Piven.
Yes,
came out
yes,
the same day as that, called Last Call. Yeah,
yeah. And I'll go back to my comment about Hollywood producing such garbage, but we'll move on from that. What is a story? Be it, I don't know, a movie, a TV show, or a book that you would want a chance to tell your own way, because David and Gavin, you're both writers, and you could tweak it, perhaps.
Oh, man. For years, I had wanted to do How to Eat Fried Worms, but then they did turn that into a movie eventually. But for me, it's I want to tell something in the Star Wars universe, and I think now that they have roughly 14 TV series and 38 more movies coming over the next decade, that is an actual legitimate possibility that I am going to chase. But I am a Star Wars fanatic, but also the storyteller. I think now that they're opening it up outside of George Lucas himself, that is a universe that I want to play in and tell a story.
That's really interesting. You would think with what you just stated, that would be a genre that you would avoid because it's potentially overpopulated and you would have less competition getting yours on the screen.
Well, yeah, there's only so many decision makers that can greenlight a Star Wars movie or a TV series, but it's such a, my thing with it is, and they're starting to do this, it's such a big world, it's time to move past the Luke Skywalker, Princess Leia, Han Solo chapter of the story after 9 movies of telling Darth Vader's, you know, rise and fall and rise again and his grandson. It's a big universe and there are a lot of planets and a lot of cool things that could be happening out there in the galaxy. So I think it's an exciting time for Star Wars that it can now become so many, so many different things outside of where it began.
David, you want to throw in there?
Well, that's kind of a massive undertaking. For me, I think back to the films that were so important to me growing up that I feel like could handle a reboot. We're drowning in reboots and.
He'll come back.
Oh, David, you're cutting out a little bit.
Hold still, David.
I'm as still as I can be. I probably got wired through your Canadian internet.
You're back. I can hear you.
Okay. I think about the films that were so important to me growing up, like The NeverEnding Story and Flight of the Navigator and The Last Starfighter, which the stories are still compelling, but it's normally stuff that could really use some of the new technology as far as the graphics and all that. But also at the same time, you go back and you watch movies from that generation, from that era, and the pacing is so much slower than what we have available now. And so it's, one of those. I'd like to. I mean, ultimately, my goal for my career is to make something as good as I think The Princess Bride is, something that is sort of timeless and should never be remade. And I did hear some rumblings that they were trying to do that. And so, if anyone's listening, please don't ruin a good thing. The book that I would have loved to have been a part of telling the story of is The Stand, which they're currently doing on CBS. And so far they're doing an okay job. And so, I'm not mad at it.
Oh, good. Sarah, is there a role that maybe hasn't been written, but it's kind of in your head, or something that you've seen from past films that you would like to do that role?
Oh, man, that's a hard one. I don't think I would ever want to redo a role. I mean, I just feel like there would be so much comparison, and I would never want to read any reviews, or I could never go on the internet ever again, because I would just be, I'm sensitive. So, but I don't know. Honestly, there's so many great scripts that I've read in this past year that I'm, like, just a lot of dark, dark stuff for women that I'm really excited about. In the past couple of years, you're always auditioning for the lead's wife or the lead's girlfriend or, something like that. But lately there's been so many more roles where the woman is the lead and she's complicated and she's dark and she's all those things. So I'm just kind of excited to play the these roles that are coming out right now. I don't want to be compared to anyone.
I get that. I understand that. And I'm really sensitive too. So so the sequel,
we can cry together.
Yeah. The sequel where you guys redo Last Call, but you are the caller, would be kind of like that, the lead's wife or whatever. I mean, there could be scripts that might be presented to Gavin, and he could say, all right, I like it, but the lead isn't going to be the man. The lead's going to be the woman, and help facilitate that movement. So, all right,
there's been a lot of that lately.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
I was going to say I will definitely be working with Sarah Booth in the future as long as I can still afford her, because she can't talk about anything yet, but she's got some pretty amazing upcoming roles. So as long as I can afford to cast her in movies, that is a certainty.
Well, let's do tell about that. I was going to say, what would you say is the greatest moment of your career thus far and why? And it sounds like if Sarah answers that first, then it's yet to occur.
Yeah. I mean, it,
I have to say one of the highlights of my career happened last week. I cannot talk about it, but it's so cool.
You're killing me, Smalls.
I'm very excited. No, I can't even tell you privately. I signed a piece of paper that I can't. But I'm very excited once I can announce it to let you know, Lee.
I'll talk about a sequel to an interview, I'll tell you right there.
Exactly.
For me, career highlight, there have been many along the way, but the crowning achievement currently is Last Call. I said this in an interview recently, that it was just sort of like the dream project where it was made amongst friends. Although, you know, our sort of technical complications and way we chose to film the movie was stressful by nature. You know, we put together just a very small, little rebellious team that managed to pull it off when many bigger players just didn't think it was possible and told me to my face that it wasn't going to be possible. But, you know, David, Sarah, and I stuck it out and got it made, got it into the world. And, you know, so far, the majority of people have been, like, truly enjoying the film and sharing reviews and telling others about it. And, you know, it's opening doors. It's not sure we would have loved to have won Sundance and be picked up by Netflix. But, well, you know, our realistic approach was that it was always going to be on us to get the film out there. But I'm just so proud of the film and what we did, and that it's just brought so many wonderful people into our lives through festivals and screenings and being able to raise money for Canadian Mental Health Association. It's just sort of the perfect storm of everything I think an indie movie should and could be. And it's going to be a hard experience to top, but I'm not unwilling to go out there and strive to find that next opportunity that may do even more.
Well, and you may hesitate to answer this question, but the next time you have a project that you want greenlit, if the money person that you're talking to is not familiar with your work, all you got to do is show them Last Call, and that proves how good you are, and that should result in having the check written and maybe even an extra zero added to it.
I mean, if you know those people, you send them David.
Yeah, please. Don't hold out on
us. Lots of movies to make. Yeah.
If I sell enough houses, I'll become that person. But that I got a ways to go yet. So, all right. Well, I thank you guys so much. This has just been very, very enjoyable. And I close every show with this statement. Remember to live each day of your life as if your legacy matters. Thanks.
KVON Napa, 1440 AM and KVON.com.
Broadcasting live from South Napa Century Center.
Narvaez Insurance Services brings you 40 years of combined experience to protect small businesses. As an independent brokerage, Narvaez Insurance Services selects the most appropriate coverage for the best value for any insurance need from different insurance carriers. Business liability, workers' comp, umbrella policies for maximum protection, and of course, auto, home, renter's insurance. Also offering DMV services for your title transfers and renewing registration. With Narvaez Insurance Services, you can avoid the long lines at the DMV. Contact Narvaez Insurance Services for a competitive quote by calling 707-927-3204. Give Bernie Narvaez a call at 707-927-3204.
Introducing a new and unique source of accessory dwelling units. HabitatADU.com is an all-in-one ADU builder who makes the entire process convenient and actually fun. The new statewide ADU building codes means more properties can accommodate them. Choose from 9 pre-designed models of varying size, built off-site, and delivered nearly 100% complete in much less time than traditional methods. Leave all the permit process and management of the project to the team at HabitatADU.com. Find out if you might benefit from an accessory dwelling unit on your property at HabitatADU.com.